With our live Christmas Eve show, which in most cases now, this is Christmas Day, except if you're in Hawaii and out there in Europe as well in some areas or wherever you may be. Well, actually in Europe, it is Christmas morning there already. As a matter of fact, in a moment, we're going to Europe live with the greatest storyteller ever born, Lionel Fanthorpe. Later on this hour, David Wilcock will join us as well. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, everybody. This is Whitley Strieber, and I'd like to wish you a happy holiday season.
Thank you, Whitley. And you know, it would not be Christmas without the great Lionel Fanthorpe, the greatest storyteller ever born. So let's go live to the United Kingdom, where he is right now. So it's Christmas morning out there now, Lionel, isn't it?
It is indeed. On the clock, on the shelf in my study, it says 10 past 8 on Christmas morning. That's 10 past 8 a.m. Can I just start by wishing you and all our friends in the USA and all our listeners a wonderful Christmas and a magnificent new year.
And I've got a little surprise for you. 2 years ago, you sent us, 'twas the night before Christmas, but you never heard us produce it for you the way we did. So I want you to listen in as we play it again.
Thank you.
"'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When, out on the lawn, there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When, what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer, with a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now, Dasher, now, Dancer, now, Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away, all! As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger on the side of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
How about that, Lionel?
That was absolutely superb. And I would like to take this opportunity of saying thank you to you and all your colleagues, your technical editors, your musicians. Wow. It's rather as if I had done a, you know, simple sketch, and then somebody who cared about me had put it in a lovely gold frame with glass over the top. It was absolutely brilliant, and I'm so grateful to the technical team. Thank you.
You're welcome. I got to tell you, it brought a little tear to my eye thinking about that. You know, I was thinking while I was listening to you that when I was a little boy, how anxious I was on Christmas Eve into Christmas morning. I couldn't sleep. You know, the presents were there, or we thought they were there, but mom and dad would bring them back, more of them. They had stuffed away. They'd put them under the tree after we went to bed, or at least they thought we went to bed.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had one rule in our family, Lionel, and that was we couldn't open the presents unless our parents were sitting there watching us do it, because that was their enjoyment. So my sister and I at the time would wake up at like 6 in the morning, and we'd get up and we'd try to pull them out of bed. You know, Mom, Dad, come on, look what Santa did. You know, there's all these presents under the trees. And, you know, my mom, what is, you know, they're both alive. She's 81, Dad's 87. They're saints as far as I'm concerned.
Wonderful.
She'd get out of bed all the time, and my dad would say, I'm going back to bed. Wait another hour. And we sometimes, some Christmases we waited an hour, others we didn't. But I got to tell you, Lionel, what I wouldn't give to be that little boy for just one more Christmas.
I wish I
could get it.
I know exactly what you mean. And I think I've only had maybe one Christmas to match that one. And when I was a boy, we were just the same in our house. I've got a younger brother and sister, and the three of us, when we were kids, Christmas was magic, Christmas was wonderful, and we had exactly the same attitude from our parents, that they wanted to watch us open those presents that they'd, you know, given up so much to buy for us, and they wanted to see our faces. And the only Christmas I think that I've ever had to match those childhood Christmases, you know, the one that really burns itself in your memory in letters of gold, Patricia and I were married in September of 1957. We've just had 53 wonderful years. This is our 53rd Christmas together.
Gosh, I was 7 years old when you got married.
Hey, great stuff. And if only we'd known you could have come to be one of the guys at the wedding. You could have been the
ring bearer. I could have been the little ring bearer.
Yeah, the ring bearer. That would have been superb.
We've
been friends for 53 years instead of 5 years.
Now, knowing me, Lionel, I would have sold it at the age of 7 to some guy outside the church.
You got a good business sense. And but it was that first Christmas we had. We sort of woke up in bed with our arms around each other on that very first sort of kind of honeymoon Christmas morning. We'd only been married a few months, and it was marvelous. And it was the first time that we had been the householders who were doing the Christmas, instead of being the son and daughter of our parents who had made Christmas for us, and we made Christmas for each other.
My exposure of Christmas in the United Kingdom is based on the Christmas Carol movie, the old-time Christmas, where, you know, the folks in England eat, you know, a goose for Christmas and things like that. Do they still do that?
Oh, yes. There's it's still very much the choice between a goose and a turkey. And as it happens, we've got the other side. We've gone for the turkey this year. And it was pretty good. We went to the butcher's yesterday morning to collect it so we could get it all ready. Because we have a three-family rotation system for our personal family Christmas that 1 year we go to one daughter and son-in-law. The next year we go to the next daughter and son-in-law, and the third year they all come to us. And so we were getting the turkey for our daughter to cook. She's entertaining us this year. And so we queued up at the butcher's early in the morning. We'd ordered just a little 10-pounder, and he came to the counter and said, "I'm sorry, I didn't have any of the small ones you asked for." Handed me a turkey that would have been big enough to wrestle.
Oh, my gosh. But it's got to be a 25-pounder. Those things are huge.
He was a big turkey. And he said, we spent yesterday getting it ready, putting all the force meat and the stuffing and the sausage meat and the bacon over the top and wrapping it up in foil.
You go all out when you cook those, don't you?
Yeah, we love it. And it's the highlight of the year. We've even got, you know, those families have these silly, fun traditions sometimes. Well, over the years, I don't know how it happened. It must have been when the children were small and they're now in their 40s. And we kind of link arms and they dance around the table singing a strange little family ditty that has the lines, "Turkey, lurkey, meat, turkey, lurkey, meat." from there, it just gets too silly to go on, but it's a Fanthorpe Christmas tradition to sing about the turkey before we eat it.
What has been one of your favorite Christmas stories of all time?
Well, one of my favorite, of course, of all time is dear old Charles John Huffham Dickens. And he and I almost shared a birthday. He was February the 7th, mine was February the 9th. You know, he was 1812 mm-hmm. to 1870, and of course it's his Christmas Carol, which is my all-time favorite. And I think what he's done in there so well is to talk about things like elementals, superhuman spirits of Christmas past, present, and future, that these were the spirits of occasions, the spirits of society and of social activity, rather than simple entities. And yet he made each one of them different. Each one was truly an entity. And then to compare and contrast those great spirits, those superhuman spirits, he brought in the ghost of poor old Jacob Marley, who was what I would call a Dickensian or Shakespearean-type ghost. He was a ghost with a purpose. He came, despite his own misery, to save Scrooge.
I loved him with the chains.
Scrooge. Oh, I did, yeah.
Scrooge!
Yeah, he said, "Hey, Scrooge, yours is longer than mine."
Yeah. Yeah.
And just like the ghost of Hamlet's father in the Shakespeare play, he came with a purpose. And I thought that was so marvelous. And then it takes us right back to the first Christmas. And that seemed to me, for guys like you and me and our listeners who enjoy the mysterious, it seemed to have so much mystery in it. There's the spirituality of the angel choir. It's something all-inclusive. So you have these spiritual beings, and this is contrasted with the humanity of the shepherds. And then we see those shepherds as guardians, which is a wonderful human quality, the guardians of the sheep on those wild, desolate hills where there were wolves and heaven knows what other dangers for the lambs if they hadn't got brave guardians. And then we hit the idea of wisdom. That's symbolized by the Magi, the three kings. And then we find faith, their faith in the guiding star and their questing spirit, their search for a great objective. And then, for me, one of the most wonderful pieces of Christmas is the innkeeper and his wife in Bethlehem. And they see this poor pregnant girl arriving exhausted, and they haven't got any rooms, and he can't turn her away. So he says, "Okay, well, there's the stable." And I can imagine the innkeeper saying to his wife, "Well, you serve the customers for 10 minutes. I'm going to see if I can clean that stable. I'm going to see if I can make it habitable."
Yeah, some new straw down or something.
Put some clean straw down, yeah. And make sure any animals in there are tied up, so that there's room for this young couple. And then there's the courage and the determination of Mary and Joseph and their love for each other and for the baby that was born to them in that stable. And so Christmas for me makes me think of all those qualities, the love, the spirituality, the humanity, guardianship, protection, protection of others, wisdom, questing, sense of purpose, searching for what's good and worthwhile. And then there's generosity and concern, courage, determination to see things through. And I think those are the way that that first Christmas came together. I think it's a way for God to tell us that he wants us to have all those qualities, the spirituality, the wisdom, the concern for others, you know, everything we just thought through there. And one of the strangest, if we look in just briefly for a mystery, I came across a story from Texas in which the witness woke up on Christmas night and saw, to her amazement, what looked like a traditional Santa Claus with the red robes and the big white beard. But beyond him, her bedroom door was open, and the Christmas tree still had the lights on in the adjoining room. And as she looked at the Santa Claus figure, she suddenly realized she could see through him. He was translucent. And the lights on the tree were visible through the shape of Santa Claus. Uh-huh. And she watched, and you can imagine just peeping over the top of the bed linen and watching him. And he took the Christmas stockings that had been put near the fireplace in the old traditional way, and he laid them instead on the coffee table. When she woke in the morning, they were not where they'd been left. They were on the coffee table. She had no explanation for it, but that is one of the most amazing Christmas ghost stories I have ever come across, and it's vouched for as true. A transparent Father Christmas who moved the stockings from where the family had hung them.
You know, this is the... Go ahead. No, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you.
No. I just think it's a wonderful story. And the other little thing I'd like to add, if we've got a minute left,
yes,
is my experience when I was making the Christmas special for one of my TV shows a few years ago, and the producer-director sent us over to Myra in Turkey, where there was the tomb of the real St. Nicholas. His holy remains had been moved, but the tomb was still there. And we had a little bit of a contretemps between the tourist authorities, who very much wanted us to go and make the film, and some of the other authorities who were not too enthusiastic about Christian legends and Christian traditions. So the lady from the tourist authority who was looking after us said, "Do you have a roadie with you, assistant?" "Yeah," I said, "yeah, sure." She said, "Well, let's go to the bank and get some $1 American bills, because they are very popular here in Turkey." I said, "Yeah, fine." So we got several dollar bills, and she said, "If you get your roadie to talk to the security guys and give them some small presents one at a time, slowly, we can whip into St. Nicholas's tomb and film him." So we said, fine. And so while our roadie was busy keeping the authorities who were not enthusiastic about having Nicholas filmed off our backs, we whisked into the tomb, and there he was, painted on the wall from the 3rd or 4th century. And he was wearing a long gray beard and a long red robe. So that Father Christmas costume goes back centuries to the way that St. Nicholas was depicted on that tomb wall. And of course, the other tradition with him, with the Christmas stockings, was that three poor girls were going to be sold as slaves. And Nicholas, who was a very wealthy man, their stockings were hanging out to dry, and he came.
Hold on, hey, Lionel, hold on for one sec. We're gonna take this break, but I'm gonna come back with you for just a little bit so we can finish that story. And we're going to go to Lionel Fenthorpe in just a second for his final story as we wish him Merry Christmas to he and his wife, Patricia. David Wilcox standing by to join us in a moment. But I want to take this brief moment, too, to thank you and a Merry Christmas to you, those of you listening to us on your favorite radio stations across North America, Coast Insiders, Streamlink members. Thank you for everything you've done for us over the years, and XM Satellite members as well. And then the various chat room and groups, of course, NighthawkZone.com, folks, a dear Merry Christmas to all of you. Imaginative Worlds, Into Infinity, the National Radio Club, Sorcery IRC, the MySpace groups, Yahoo Chat, the Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, Above Top Secret, the SoCal UFO Meetup Group. How about the Hollywood Ghost Hunters? And in St. Louis, our friend Greg the Cook, shivering outside, feeding the masses. We'll be back with a quick story from Lionel Fenthorpe now. Lionel, let's finish up this story from you before I move on to David Wilcox. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm honored, and thank you, George. Yeah, just to finish it off, as in, you know, we were in Myra in Turkey filming a Christmas special for the television company I was then with, and we'd gone into the tomb of St. Nicholas and the marvelous adventure to see the picture on the wall. But the great thing about St. Nicholas, one of the wonderful things he did, which is where we get the Christmas stocking tradition from centuries later, these three poor girls, their father had gone bankrupt and they were to be sold into slavery, but they had courage, they had pride, and they said, if we're going to be put on the auction block, we'll look our best. And they had washed all their clothes, including the stockings, and the stockings were hanging outside the window to dry. Nicholas came past. He'd heard of their predicament and their father's bankruptcy, and he put a bag of gold in each of their stockings. When they took with him in the morning, not only could they pay their father's debts, and they were free, but they also had enough dowry to find three lovely husbands, and they lived happily ever after. But that's Nicholas and the Christmas stockings, and may not find a bag of gold in ours, but it'll be something good from someone who loves us.
And Lionel, as we say goodnight, do your best Santa Claus ho-ho-ho impression.
Ho-ho-ho-ho-ho. What would you like for Christmas? Ho-ho-ho.
Have a great Christmas, Lionel.
And you, George, and all our listeners, God bless you all.
We'll be back with David Wilcox on Coast to Coast AM. And next hour, we'll have Christmas open lines. Those of you on hold now, if you want to just stay there, I'll try to get some of you this hour. But if not, we've got full open lines next hour as well. David Wilcox, author, lecturer, researcher. He's been on Ancient Aliens as well. He has intensely researched ufology, ancient civilizations, and consciousness science. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Merry Christmas, David.
Merry Christmas to you, George.
You too, my friend. How have you been? What's new?
Well, I was thinking about Christmas growing up as a kid, and, you know, I never got taken in by the Santa Claus thing.
Knowing you, I would guess that to be true.
I mean, think about it, right? He's got maybe 10 hours, 10 p.m. to 8 a.m., right? And maybe, you know, but let's just say 10 hours, 60 minutes an hour, right?
You Scrooge.
60 seconds a minute, right? So that's 360 minutes an hour, and then 10 hours is 36,000. So even if he only had 1 second per house, he could only do 36,000 houses.
Well, David, you're thinking of it in conventional time. He's got the ability to stop time. I bet when you were a kid and you went to the mall, you pulled his beard down, didn't you?
Well, I also saw the Easter Bunny, and there was a person in there, you know, behind that mask.
And that did it for you, didn't it?
Well, yeah, the mall Santa thing was another way that I kind of debunked the whole myth. You know, I was like, well, wait a minute. How could he be here and also be everywhere else? Because obviously this isn't the only mall in the country.
See, David's with us tonight because what would a Christmas show be without Scrooge popping in to say hi? Now, actually, you know, David's mind is analytical, so I expected him to try to analyze this the Santa routine. But there's
the science of Santa. Santa
the
is
science
a
of Santa.
You know that, right?
That's your next book, The Science of Santa.
Santa is a mushroom. That's my next book.
Yeah, so speaking of that, what are you up to these days?
You don't know about Santa being a mushroom?
Yes, I do. I did have a guest on some time ago who claimed not only was he a mushroom, he looked like one. Mushrooms, you know, Santa was developed based on the look of a mushroom.
Right.
And it was a bizarre theory, I'll tell you.
We were laughing about it tonight. I had dinner at a nice restaurant. I was saying, did you guys know Santa is a mushroom?
Hey, what's new on the film front for you?
Oh, it's going very well. As you already know, George, but some people might not, I'm working with Jim Hart, who wrote the movie Contact. And
yes.
Gosh, that ending is one of the most incredible endings. I mean, up until Contact, I think most people who were into UFOs probably said Spielberg was their favorite guy between E.T. or Close Encounters. But even, you know, those endings I don't think are as good as Contact. Because in Close Encounters, the UFO comes, but then he goes inside and it's over. Roll the credits. Whereas in Contact, she has this beautiful Stargate ride. And I think that the Santa Vortex kind of opens up this path for us to think metaphysically.
Sure does.
And when you're a kid, I mean, I did believe it when I was young, really young. But, you know, when you saw those Apollo astronauts go around the dark side of the moon and then come back, and then you probably heard people talk about this too, George, when he goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, people of America, I can now confirm that there is such
there
a thing as Santa,
Santa
Claus."
Yep.
Yeah. And people are like, what the heck is he talking about, you know? And honestly, you know, what we're writing with Jim is a film that, if it gets made, is going to be one of the most incredible metaphysical payoffs you've ever seen in any movie. I mean, it's going to be off the chart. And
you let us know how that develops. I would love.
Yeah, and I my whole work has always been about showing us that the magic has not been lost. I think when you're a kid and you're wrestling with the Santa Claus myth, as we get older, we say, "Oh, there's no such thing as Santa Claus," and we want to discount all this type of stuff. We want to say, well, this is the real world, and I'm a skeptic now, and I believe in science. I don't believe in this crap. But look, science is coming up against one anomaly after another that we cannot explain. And I'm writing a whole book on this right now, and I'm almost finished, so it's like all these thoughts are running through my mind. But one of the things I was researching just today was what's called facilitated learning. Now, that term doesn't sound very interesting. It sounds like something you'd fall asleep in 30 seconds if I started talking about it. But facilitated learning is basically describing how all these different people, whether it's the discovery of calculus, the discovery of the radio, the discovery of electric light, all these different things, and there's many, many examples that were covered in a recent article in September in Wired magazine, where people discover the same thing at the same time. And then you wonder, well, what's going on? How is it that all these different ideas, the same ideas show up in different people at the same time? Well, the conclusion that I've come to, as you know, is that we live in a reality where we have a shared mental field, that the actual mind that you're using right now as you listen to me talk to you is an energetic phenomenon that is online with other people. There's all these wonderful scientific experiments that have proven, and I mean proven, this is down to trillion to one against chance, as a meta-analysis of 43 different studies, that we actually do respond to each other. If you are in love with someone and that person has a heart rate and a brainwave activity that's coherent, you're going to have the same brainwaves and the same heart rate yourself and other vital signs. And whoever has the most coherence wins. And the thing is, coherence means how smooth is the pattern, how basically high vibration, if you want to use a metaphysical term. And so that's really, that coherence can be measured in terms of how loving we are. The more loving we are, the better our coherence improves in terms of brainwave activity, heart rate, respiratory rate, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I believe that.
And then our partner picks up on that. And that also includes people that we work with, people that we are good friends with. And so we have, you know, Grinberg Zauberbaum, this other scientist, separated people after 20 minutes of meditating together into two different rooms, and then he flashed bright light in one person's eyes, and the other person would have a shock in their brain waves at the same time that the person had the light flash in their eyes. He did it 100 times at random, And 25% of the time, the other person had an identical brainwave as that light flashed. So to me, what this is all saying is that we are interconnected on a way that we cannot normally understand. And therefore, there is such a thing as a Santa Claus, ultimately. So I'm not a Scrooge.
No, never. Why do you think during this period of Christmas to New Year's, people are generally happier? Now, some people are very depressed, no question about that. But they seem to be happier during this period, most people, than the rest of the year. How come?
I think that the promise of Christmas is ultimately the promise of achieving some sort of metaphysical transformation. You know, the story of Jesus is a story that a lot of people kind of have put at arm's length, but it's a story about a person who comes here and basically sets aside his own life for others. And that selflessness is often revered in many Hollywood films, but there's also the sense that if we come into an awareness of this compassion, that we will achieve something that's monumental. And in a way, whether we live that manifestation or not, we can deliver to others joy. And we deliver that in terms of the cheer that we share and the family bonding that happens. And so, yes, the suicide rates are higher. The highest times of the year is Thanksgiving and Christmas.
That's right.
But it's like a polarization. The more that things polarize in one direction, the more they polarize the other direction. And a lot of times you don't get to see your family most of the year. I know I don't. And so I'm here now, and it feels great to be around the people who I love. And I'm sorry that I can't have everybody who I love here at the same time. But, you know, it's you do what you can. And I'm very happy to share in the Christmas spirit. And, you know, it's a great time for everyone.
Well, you know, it's fun going to conferences with you, David, because people flock around you because of your mindset. I mean, you're a great thinker. I think the statue of the thinker was probably developed after they looked at you.
That was when I was sitting on the toilet, actually.
I did get a call once from Moondog from the Nighthawk Zone, who was on hold for so long. By the time I went to him, he had just flushed the toilet on the air. It's one of those classic moments. Look, I want to take a few moments while I still have you to get your take on 2012. As you know, you're on the program that night, December 21st, 2012, 2 years from now. What do you think? Have you changed your views at all?
Well, I consider this to be an investigation. I would be biased beyond the level of any type of scientific objectivity, which is what I try to do. I try to be scientific about this. You know, if I were to suddenly declare that I have a definitive conclusion about what's going to happen. But what has come clearer and clearer to me is that just as we all share the same consciousness, I believe that ultimately the consciousness is the base. The consciousness is the base of matter. It's the base of energy. It's the base of space. And it's the base of time. We still haven't really appreciated Einstein's discovery that space and time are actually one and the same thing, and as we move through space, we move through time. The faster you move through space, the faster you move through time. We all know this, but the real implications are that both space and time are a construct of some greater reality that's intertwined, that must be also consciousness based on the fact that consciousness has these energetic properties between people. So I think what that means is if you see all these different cultures around the world that all have the myths around the precession of the equinoxes, this 25,000-year cycle, and they all say that once this cycle ends that there's going to be a golden age that begins. It's not doom and gloom. That suggests to me that somehow this great cycle affects human evolution. Sure enough, if you go back to the last precession of the equinoxes, that's when all the Neanderthals suddenly died out. And if you go back to 50,000 years ago, there's this sudden massive burst of creativity and spirituality. Prior to 50,000 years ago, there's no evidence in the fossil record of anybody doing anything that was spiritual or artistic or creative. The only tools they made were for survival. And then suddenly, 50,000 years ago, everybody got a lot more interesting to hang out with. So what's going to happen this time? Well, I think it's already happening. You look at University of Wisconsin anthropologist Dr. John Hawks, I've said this before, in the last 5,000 years, human evolution has sped up on a measurable DNA level by 100 times. It's 100 times faster now than it was 5,000 years ago. So something's already happening. In other words, 2012 is not something where you sit back and you say, well, you know, I wonder if something's going to happen that year. I wonder if when I'm on the air with George on December 21st, if I'm suddenly going to hiccup and turn into a ball of light. You know, but that's not the way you look at it.
By the way, I promised so many people appearances that night. I think I better start the show in a few weeks.
I know. I'm going to call in that favor, man. You got to watch out.
Oh, yeah. You'll be there. Let's see if we have time for a call or two, David, here.
Okay.
For some folks who have been on hold for a while. Corning, California, we go. Corey, Merry Christmas to you, Corey.
Well, Merry Christmas to you guys. Yeah. And, you know, when I was, about 7 years old, I came off the bus after a bully had told me that there wasn't a Santa Claus. I finally caught up with you, David. what I wanted to say is, George, I had told you about my nephew committing suicide 3 nights ago, and I was really stressing over what happens to the soul afterwards, and your comments were really great, but I continue to stress, and tonight, while your first guest was talking about electrostatic energy, I was thinking about my nephew, and I was basically praying to him, saying, give me his sign tonight. It's Christmas. We used to get together and play music and do art and things each Christmas, and it's really been tough. Well, I've been here in this house for 3 years now, and I'm sitting here in my room. I look out my bedroom, and in the hallway, my hallway is lit up with a light that shouldn't be there, and so I get up. I go over there, and a light that has never worked, though the switch remained on, a light that has never worked in here, and I've had people check it in the past, and they can't find out what's wrong with it. It was the bathroom light. It was on, and I was asking for a sign from my nephew, Jason. And there you go. Yeah,
fantastic.
Synchronicity, and I'm sitting here with chills and comfort, and I want to just say thank you for the prayers and meditation,
absolutely,
everybody out there in the Coast to Coast family.
Well,
and one more thing. Thank you.
30 seconds, Corey. Go ahead.
Okay. Could we get Roger Greer to come back on? I play the piano. We could do it right over the air. We can get John Fogerty, and we could just do a little.
We are working to get Roger Lear back on. By the way, the Little Drummer Boy was sung by Hank Williams Jr. We got a lot of people sending me emails going, who was that? Who was David? I've got to tell you, too, David is an accomplished musician. What's the name of that flute you play?
Well, it's actually the Lakota Sioux Native American flute, and I've owned it since 1993, and I gave you a little 60-second taste on stage in San Leandro, and you really liked it.
You were fantastic. I got to get you on with that, too. Again, David, you have a wonderful Christmas. Enjoy it with your family. You've worked hard this year. And I look forward to working with you again next year.
Thank you, George. I'm honored that you have me on the show. I appreciate it.
David Wilcock. Now, when we come back in just a moment, we're going to have Christmas Eve into Christmas Day now. Open lines. I want your stories. I want your miracle stories. I want you to talk about what Christmas was like for you. And we'll go from there with special open lines. It's also a tradition for me to play a little clip from one of my favorite movies, It's a Wonderful Life. We'll do that, too. We'll also hear a letter from Michael done by the great Lee Allen. And, with open lines, anything else will happen on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. So I look forward to another hour spending it with you. We'll be right back.